Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shit podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome. Well, hello, everyone. You know, in my practice, I cannot tell you how many people have come in over the years and had no idea that they could just say no to someone when they were asked to do a favor, or simply stop doing something just because they've always done it. And they've done it mostly because they felt obligated to do it, or somehow convinced themselves of some faulty belief, like if they didn't do it, nobody else would. Or told themselves it's just easier to do it because other people don't know how to do it the right way. And they would end up not liking how it was done, so they'd have to end up doing it anyway. Or even worse, they would be afraid to say that they could not do something because then others would be disappointed, angry, or even not like them. They might even feel guilty or selfish if they said no or did something for themselves instead of doing something for others. Likewise, I've had a number of people struggling with letting go of the need to be and do everything perfect. Now, this is especially true with many people who have disordered eating, eating disorders, or body image issues. They're just chasing perfection. And if they don't look it, then they're a failure. And if they have not achieved it, then it's their fault. And some even believe that they can only be truly happy once they look perfect. Or their whole day revolves around following all of their eating disorder rules and rituals to perfection. One slip or minor deviation can lead to extreme anxiety and an entire day of feeling off. And if you can relate to any of what I just said, then today's show is just for you. And our guest today is here to discuss more about the struggles people have in regard to people pleasing, perfectionism, and setting and maintaining clear, healthy boundaries. This is not a show to miss. Ryan Lindner is a personal development specialist who has worked as a behavioral coach for clients in top organizations all over the world. After two sudden unexplained cardiac arrests at a young age, he began to explore different perspectives with clients that come with any profound life-changing event. He has conducted thousands of coaching sessions, has led operations for a major leadership and organizational change company, and manages learning and development projects for companies to reshape their customer experience. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. Excited to chat.
So I really love having you on because you do have some experience that I think a lot of the guests listening today can relate to, but you also have a topic that I'm really excited to get into as well. So I'm just wondering, would you mind sharing a little bit about yourself so the listeners can get to know you?
Yeah, I'd love to. I've been a coach for almost 20 years. I specialize in transitions. So a lot of identity issues, as an example, someone's going through a retirement. They've been in the same career like a soldier for 30 years. And then they go through this, well, who am I after I'm a soldier? And you're still you. And you were a you before you were a soldier, and you'll be you after you're a soldier. And I work with a lot of those transitional issues. And I also work a lot with busyness. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people can relate sort of on that to-do list and helping people get unstuck. I've done thousands and thousands of sessions, did about 6,000 sessions for the military. After I worked with individuals, I started working with organizations and retraining their employees to positively affect company culture and wellness and reduce turnover and things like that. So it's all about change and helping people through that.
So, and personally, I know you can relate to some of the listeners as well, which, you know, I think is always interesting when I have guests on here who can kind of relate a little bit to what the podcast I have is about. I don't know if you're comfortable sharing a little bit about your journey with that as well.
Sure. Yeah. You know, growing up, I was, introverted, almost off the chart. Like, you know, on the Myers-Briggs, I was always, you know, very dominant in the introversion. Most of my clients, out of the thousands of clients I've done, they would never guess it though, because I'm not shy. And I know there's, you know, there's a difference between introversion and shyness, but always very quiet natured, always introverted, grew up with just crushing anxiety, people pleaser. I had a ton of image issues, had an eating disorder myself. And I think as a male, it was harder to relate, because I did know several females with eating disorders, but I actually never knew a male growing up with an eating disorder. And it was, I was at times, you know, made fun of. And, you know, it started with being made fun of for being just slightly overweight. And then it created this, you know, being this quiet sort of introverted guy. I basically stopped eating, you know, a lot, and I lost just a ton of weight. And that cultivated a kind of a big addiction to exercise too, because I thought, you know, well, it's so hard for me socially that, you know, maybe if I am in just phenomenal shape, it was something I could be good at and I could feel good about myself, because at least I can control that, right? And there was a lot of people pleasing as well. Always felt like I had to earn my worth by doing things that's my love language as well as acts of service. And I always felt like my worth had to be earned in some way. And so up and through my 20s, it was really, I'm in my low 40s now. It was, I did just whatever I could for people. And I thought that would make them like me. And until I learned how to detach in some way and really pay attention to the dialogue that was going on in my own head, you know, how you think about yourself often manifests in your behaviors and how other people see that. So I had to really take care of myself first. And once I started taking care of myself, I was actually better at helping others.
So interesting. So probably maybe people listening going, well, how did you figure out you needed to take care of yourself, going from like, gosh, I want other people to like me and I need to be something other than what I am, to, oh, wait, let me focus on me and take care of me.
It was tough. I think, you know, you go, things get so dark and you just say, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this. And I was always, and this is why I got into coaching too. It's really that, you know, the helping people aspect of it. And I found I could relate to a lot, you know, a lot of my 80% of my clientele are female, and most of them are just crazy busy, you know, just super busy, stress, a lot of their parents. I'm a parent as well. But they gravitated towards me. I could relate. And I think it's about treating yourself as if you're someone you care about, right? A lot of us struggling with this, we would never treat someone we love like that. We would never treat a friend like that, but that's the way we speak internally. And I think what helped me, sort of the catalyst that allowed me to get out of that, was sort of this, you know, mindfulness is a hot topic right now, but this was before it was. And it was really, I can't do this anymore. You know, like something's got to give. And what you don't accept, you are saying that you are willing to carry it forever. Or what you don't address, you're saying you're willing to carry it forever. And I just said, yeah, I can't do this anymore. And I get to choose how I'm going to show up in the world. And one big catalyst for me was I had two cardiac arrests, and sudden. And I've seen every specialist, Mayo Clinic kind of stuff. And I have a pacemaker now. So I was just walking along one day and just dropped. And that completely changed the way I think, in that when you go through a trauma, or you really appreciate what you have, you prioritize your energy differently. So I began to, you know, that's all time management is really. It's just the prioritization of your energy. And I just said, you know what? All the worrying, all the self-talk, all the stuff I went through, I don't have time for that. And there was a decision about, you know what? Not only do I not want to be somebody else, but what would it be cool if you just loved your introversion? Like, a lot of people they spend their whole lives trying to be this other person they think they should be, right? But once you own it, once you say, there's nothing to fix, what are the advantages to being you? And I have found a lot of advantages to being introverted. Introverted people tend to be more introspective. Sometimes they are not, in some cases, not as reactive. A lot of times they're good listeners. And there are a lot of... So to answer your question, I think it was really putting in perspective what was worth and not worth my time. And then really looking at what I could be grateful for about myself, instead of chasing this version of myself that really wasn't me, if that makes sense.
Totally. And my goodness, like you said, you had 2 cardiac arrests?
Yeah, they were a day apart. But after that, they decided to give me the pacemaker as a little safety net there. So,
so that must have been very terrifying. It sounds like life-altering, obviously, but just to come out of nowhere.
I mean nowhere. I was I started my career in wellness, personal training, you know, the exercise and all that. So I ate well, non-smoker, you know, all that. No family history. I just felt a little strange. And I looked to a woman standing next to me and I said, I'm going down now. And, you know, my vision started to close in and I woke up in the ER with people rushing around like it was from a movie, you know, and it was terrifying. But I think it pulled me into the present moment and I became really clear about what is and is not worth your energy. And I think you appreciate things about yourself when you go through that. You appreciate, you know, what you won't be able to move forward unless you own who you are and have gratitude for that person. You know, we're all going through stuff and, you know, we're all people. And I think once you love that person, you know, and there's no one else I'd rather be, but it really does put it in perspective for sure.
I'm curious because I know, you know, there's this, like you said, you didn't have any of these red flags for somebody who would have a heart attack and you're so young still and just seems like a shock, right? There's always this misinformation out there that if you're doing all these quote unquote correct, right things, living this lifestyle, that obviously you having a heart attack is quite shocking. And so do you think any of that was related to you trying to become this person you thought you should be in the way you were going about your lifestyle, like that may have contributed? And so that also brought about some changes in the way you maybe were with your eating disorder or your exercise?
That's all crossed my mind. And I've, again, seen all kinds of specialists. Still a little bit of a mystery, but the closest thing they can they're thinking maybe it's electrical problems, but I don't know if that's what caused it. But I did go down that line of thinking, like, was the way that I treated myself in the past, did that have any bearing on this? And I thought about what was and was not worth worrying about, all those years of anxiety, the years, you know, I carried it. And you know, most people spend their whole lives living either in the past or the future, you know, the past pain they're carrying around, they can't let go, or future anxiety. And all it took was a decision to say, I'm done with that. And, you know, everything that matters is I already have, you know, my family. And I, again, I think a lot of those symptoms, I would say, the anxiety, the things that we're coping for, you know, that causes the eating disorder or contributes to it. A lot of that for me was the result of not knowing my worth, not realizing it, looking for approval in others. And I didn't even have my own. And that was really eye-opening for me, is it doesn't matter what those people think of you. And once you truly own it and appreciate it, a lot of those symptoms dissipate. They really do. The anxiety, I mean, I can get up on stage and talk. And that was something I could never do before. Never. Oh God, it would be terrifying. But it's just me not needing that. I don't need the value from other people anymore. And I have over the years worked a lot with people on boundaries, and it is, you know, I know there's this a lot of times guilty feeling when people, maybe there's some listeners who can relate to, you know, you're a people pleaser perhaps, and you feel like, you know, that's how I earn my value. But what you find is that if you take care of yourself first, it's like what they tell you on an airplane. If you take the oxygen first, right, you can, then you help others, because otherwise you're part of the chaos, right? So if you take good care of yourself, you, and I've seen this with many, 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 many clients, if you take care of yourself and be your best self, you will be better for other people. You will. And so, but your own wellness, how good are you going to be helping other people if you are struggling like that? And that's,
you know, that's the interesting part, right? Because I think people will kind of like, oh no, like if I put myself first, I'm selfish, or, well, how can I possibly, you know, take time to go do X, Y, or Z for me when, you know, this person needs this, or my kids need this, or there's this going on. Like, I, you know, I'll feel guilty or I'll feel selfish. Like, not possible. There's not enough time.
You, and I think that comes from being secure in who you are and your own self-talk. And it's okay if you can't do something. And you know what? You can give people permission not to like it. And that's okay too. But once it's detached from your value, you know, how people feel about it has no bearing on my value, because you can't please everybody. And there's been a lot of times in my life where I tried to please people and it didn't work. And then I'd be like, well, was I not good enough? Like, I tried so hard to please people and they're still not happy with me. And I realized quickly that you really don't have any control over how other people feel about you. And some people aren't going to like you no matter what you do. But you have to ask yourself, and this is the way I think things through very like logically, you know, what does it really matter if someone dislikes you, or, you know, what does it really matter? And it doesn't. You're still you, you know, whether you were able to please them or not. But yeah, it's still a journey. I mean, it's still a journey. I think, you know, it's just being constantly aware of how you're talking to yourself.
So that, I mean, that's an interesting concept of, you know, sometimes people will say, you know, I need people to like me. That's my whole purpose, is I take care of everyone else. And, you know, you're talking about transitions, like how to transition out of maybe that identity of being the person that does everything for everyone else, or is the go-to person. And like, do you work with people on how to stop being that and realizing like you can have another purpose in people's lives, or maybe you're teaching people to treat you that way because you're always saying yes and always sacrificing and like they're not really getting to know you. You're just there to do for everybody.
Yeah, I do encounter that a lot as well, is most people think they are a role, or they try to be a role and not a person. And that, you know, and every day we're roles all day long. You know, you're a parent one moment and you're going to work and you're whatever it is, the next a manager or whatever your job is. And we spend our whole life trying to be this role. And then we realize our value never comes from that role. But that is the culture that we're in. I mean, if you meet somebody, the first thing they tell you is, or the first thing they ask is, so what do you do? Or you ask about someone and they give you their resume. No, that's not you either. That's about you. That's not who you are. Who you are transcends all that. Who you are is beyond those roles. So what you can do with other people is you can be a person, right? And that shifts it from being transactional to more interactional, to where you're present with them. And that's all you have to do. That's all you have to do. And, you know, when I've worked with clients on boundaries and identity and those types of things, it's really about exploring, okay, well, what does it mean to, like, who am I? What does that mean? What is my purpose, right? You know, even if you think your purpose is helping people, you know, I've worked with a lot of nurses, for example, and they'll say, well, I love being a nurse because I can help people. And that's my purpose. My purpose is to be a nurse. No, the nurse is a role. It's what you do in that role. That's an extension of who you are. You can help people without the role. You can help people. That's who you are. That's an extension of who you are. If you're on a deserted island, are you still a nurse? No. That was a role that you've lived in your life. So there's lots of exercises we do, but it's really about stopping the chatter, the noise, and being present in their daily lives and being honest with themselves about what they can actually do and what they cannot do. Because if something doesn't help you, it hurts. If you are overextended all the time, you know, it's like a balloon. You blow up and you blow up. It's going to blow out at the weakest point, right? And that's what happens when you're overextended all the time. There's no recovery, and eventually something's got to give. So it's about getting honest about what you can do and what you can't do. And if you were honest about that, then you can say, you know what, if people don't like it, and I've been honest with them, I give them permission not to like it. And I'm okay with that because I'm honest with myself and I'm honest with other people. And I'm going to be a better person because of it. And I'm going to help people. I'm going to help them better because of it.
Bring up a great point too. If people don't like you or they're angry with you because you set a boundary for yourself to take care of yourself, you really have to wonder, like, are those healthy people to have in your life? Why would you want them in your life?
That's a fantastic point. And I think it's a revealer. You know, if someone cared about the real you and not just the role, if they're treating you like a means to an end of some type and they need something from you, then they didn't care about you to begin with. But people you love and that love you, your friends, your family, they're going to understand, you know. And I've had several people, you know, and I'm sure other people can relate as well, who, yeah, they weren't happy because I was honest, but do they care about, it's why people leave jobs, right? They feel like they're, you know, companies a lot of times hire roles and not people. And that's why a lot of people quit. You know, that's one thing I've done is I track turnover for companies and determine why that's occurring. And I retrain their leadership. And it's all about realizing that these are people And you have to connect with them as individuals and not just treat them like roles. So yeah, I mean, if people, you're absolutely right. If people care and they're people worth having, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And they're going to love you anyway. You don't need to earn your worth, you know?
Like for anyone listening out there who's really struggling and they can't imagine saying no, or they can't imagine not feeling guilty for saying no. They're listening to this going, yeah, that sounds great, but no. Yes, but kind of thing. Like, do you have any suggestions or words for them that might get them on a different path?
I have found that it all starts with your internal dialogue and how you feel about yourself, because that's always going to reflect to other people. And I recommend you plug in and find something that works for you to some sort of, it could be meditation, it could be something that keeps you still. Because what's happened is you've developed habits over a period of years. And there's nothing I could tell you that would be an on-off switch that would, you could wake up tomorrow and it's going to take, you know, again, you've had years of these habits of the self-dialogue that you didn't realize, you know, was going on. And it took a commitment. A lot of my clients experience this, I've experienced this, where I really had to plug in every day and show up for myself every day. And it could be an audio exercise. Maybe it was meditation. Maybe it was just stillness. Maybe it was just sitting for 10 minutes. It's something. And I tried to get in the habit of just being aware, just awareness, not even stopping, but just being aware of how I was thinking. And then eventually I was able to detach from it as almost as if it wasn't me talking in my head like that. I would look at it and say, oh, there I go again. There I go again. And am I talking about anything that is true? Or am I just, you know, a lot of people, oh, you know, something didn't work, or they failed in something, or they made a mistake, and oh, I'm a loser. I can't do that. I, you know, it's all that talk. And I started to ask myself, does this help or does it hurt? What's true about what I'm saying? Or am I just, you know, going off on a tangent, or is it just the noise? But you first got to be aware of it. And once you get in the habit of doing that, and you go almost like you're not even taking it seriously, like, there I go again with the internal dialogue. And, you know, I don't believe it. That's just a habit. And it took a daily practice. Journaling has been helpful. For a long time, I did workbooks as well, just, and I can recommend some. But it's really generating the awareness first, because if the awareness isn't there, again, you've had this habit, you know, for years and years and years and years. And most people, sometimes their whole lives, they're not aware of it.
And I don't know about you, you know, when I had my eating disorder, my mind was so occupied with all my eating disorder thoughts, I didn't even have the ability to access what I was really thinking underneath all that. It was a great distractor when I was just focusing on, you know, all the, what I needed to eat, couldn't eat, feeling guilty, fitting in the rituals, the routines, the whole feeling bad about myself. Like all the eating disorder talk was so loud and kind of masked it all, that what was underneath there when that all cleared up was needed to be accessed, right? I was just like, yeah. I don't know if you found that too, but that was very interesting work.
Yeah, that's a good point. I would say a lot of the people I've worked with, and myself included in my past, there's a lot of people who struggle with this. They have perfectionism. Mm-hmm. And so their expectations are so high. And if they don't meet those, then it gets worse. And it's a repeating cycle. So a lot of the clients I've seen who've been successful, they treat it, it's just a shift in your of how you think about it and how you approach it. I had a lot of success with treating everything like an experiment. And every day is a redo. Every day is a redo. Again, it's that internal dialogue. And so if I don't get something perfect today, that's cool. Let's try go again tomorrow. And again, unlimited redos. And give yourself that grace. How would you help a friend or a family member struggling with this, right? You would give them a lot more grace, a lot more grace than you would give yourself. And so, again, treat yourself as if you're a person you care about. And for me, it was, okay, I don't care if this takes me, it's unlimited redos, give myself that grace. And I no longer care if I get it perfect. It's about progress. It's about putting one foot in front of the other. Because when we're perfectionists, a lot of times we're like, I got to do it 100% now and get it right. But you're going to see results long before. You don't have to get it perfect. You just have to get it going and show up. You just have to show up every day. And that's all you have to do. But I think it's just you're right. Just a shift, I think, in the way you look at it.
Yeah. I often hear people say, oh, if I'm not mean to myself in my mind, if I don't beat myself up, then I'm not. That's why I do things so well, because I'm so hard on myself. That motivates me to do well. And if I'm nice to myself, I'll just be mediocre. Or I'll fail. I'll kind of just be like, you can do whatever you want. And then I won't be as successful or as good as I have been. That's what's kept me high achieving. I don't know if you've ever heard people say that, but I hear that all the time. Like, I can't get rid of my critic. That's what keeps me going. So it keeps me at this high level.
I've seen that. And my experience is that a lot of those people are chasing happiness and approval outside themselves. And it's always fleeting that way. If you're chasing, it's like being the role. If we're always trying to chase this validation outside of ourselves, a lot of people that I've worked with, they're certainly high achievers, but it's all about, it's on paper, right? And they've got accolades, maybe certifications, degrees, all this stuff. And they think all that makes them who they are. And most of those people at some point or another realized that was not true, even though, I mean, are they high achievers? Yes. But anything external, it eventually does fall away, because you, and you are also relying on circumstances to be happy. Happiness is just like a state of mind, right? It's just circumstances align right now and they make me feel good about my life. And, but they don't, it's always temporary. It's always fleeting. You know, once something goes wrong or they don't achieve something, then that dialogue starts again. So even if they feel like, yeah, that keeps me going, I found them deep down. They go through this where it's like they go through feelings of, oh, I feel really good about myself. And then when they don't, it's really bad. So it's like a roller coaster up and down for years. And it's never lasting in my experience. Peace and happiness are two different things. And I feel like happiness, yeah, maybe a state of mind, but peace is really that feeling of I am enough now and I don't need any of that stuff to get there.
Great state of that would be for most people to be in, just to accept themselves and be feeling, or to have that sense of I'm good enough right now as I am.
Yeah. And dealing a lot, well, personally as well with in trauma, a lot of trauma does something to us. It pulls us into the moment. You know, none of us have problems when we're in the ICU. I mean, the problem is in the ICU, but I'm not thinking about all the to-do lists. I got to mow the grass. I got to pick up. I'm not thinking about that, you know, in the ICU. And when people have maybe a loved one pass away or get in a car accident, what that does is it forces them to stop and look within. And even some of those high achievers, they realize, whoa, I'm not thinking about those achievements when I'm sitting in the ICU. What then they ask the question, possibly for the first time, which is what really matters. You know, if you ask people what really matters in their life, most of them will intellectually say, and they'll understand it, yeah, my family matters and all that, but they don't reflect it in their daily life. And so what I try to work with people on is, okay, let's not wait for a trauma to get really clear about what's going on. Let's think that way now. And again, if it doesn't come from within your gratitude, your worth, it will be fleeting for you. It will be fleeting. So I think, again, it's just about showing up. It's not going to happen overnight. It's just about showing up every day. Finding what works for you. And it could be, you know, still time. It could be a meditation, something that allows you to be present and form that habit.
You've given lots of great, you know, information here. And I'm sure people listening will be like, okay, so if I want to work with Ryan or talk more about him or find you, how can they do that?
They can go to my website, rslindner.com, L-I-N-D-N-E-R. Or they can go to my book website, which is halfknownlifebook.com. And all my social media links are connected in there. I don't actually do one-on-one coaching anymore. It's mostly groups. But my book really delves into the we can't see ourselves concept and really exploring. The purpose of your life is to explore your life. That's the purpose. It's not to be a role. It is to explore the question about who you are. It's to fully explore that person.
And all that information will be on the show notes, of course. So head on over to the website and I'll have all that information there. I don't know if there's any other kind of materials or things you could guide people toward if they're interested.
Sure. Yeah, if they're interested, I can also, if they mention you and your podcast, I can get them a free audiobook as well, if they would like.
Okay, thank you. That's very generous. Awesome. All right. Any last words before we end? I mean, you've said so many great, wonderful things, but I didn't know if there's any last words before we end the show.
I would say just, you know, take it a day at a time, you know, love yourself, you know, one day things will be clear and appreciate what is great about yourself. And there is something very unique and very great about it. And just keep showing up. That's it. That's all it takes. You just show up every day. That's it.
Ryan, thank you so much for sharing all your personal information and all of this great information with the show and to our listeners. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guest are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.